Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello, in this episode of Scrappy ABM, you're actually going to hear where I was interviewed on somebody else's show. We just love the content so much, we wanted you to hear it and make sure that you got it. So I hope you enjoy this episode of Scrappy ABM.
Hello, and welcome to Founder Led, the podcast where we dive into the minds of today's successful entrepreneurs. Today, I'm joined by Mason Cosby, who's the founder and CEO of Scrappy ABM. Mason, we initially connected on LinkedIn, and you know, after you shared your story of starting Scrappy ABM, and you know, you're doing it when you just had your daughter, and it was a bit of a side hustle, I just knew we had to have you on the podcast to share this story and really the opportunity ahead that you see for account-based marketing and business building as well. So I wanted to welcome you to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's start off with a couple, you know, softball questions. What do you normally have for breakfast in the morning to give you the energy for the day?
Nothing. I just go right from, I wake up, I go to the gym real quick because I've been convicted that I need to take more care of my health. And then I get home, hop in a shower, and then get right to work. And then every day, if you are on a call with me around like noon or 12:30, my wife brings me a smoothie every day.
There we go. I remember seeing that last time, like clockwork. Yep.
Every day. So she's very sweet to me to let me make sure we get as much work done between the hours of 8 and 5 so that I can then spend time with our family in the evening.
Nice. And you said you've got a daughter. How old is she?
She just turned 2, and at literally any second, maybe number 2 will actually get here. So my wife is on official baby watch for delivery on number 2.
Amazing. Growth all around in the business and at home.
Yeah, it's been a while, 2 years.
Well, great. Let's dive into the story and, you know, the founding journey for your entrepreneurial journey, but also Scrappy ABM. So take us back, share a bit about, you know, your story, your background that led to you starting Scrappy ABM.
Yeah, I'll make a relatively medium story short. Started in sales, then landed running marketing at a fintech company, which is where I learned about account-based marketing. So we sold to a very specific niche and a vertical. And I was talking about like, oh, we just got to get more opportunities in the pipeline. And somebody was like, you should do ABM. And then they explained it to me. I was like, well, what would everybody else be doing? Because again, came from sales first. So like I had an account list that I was calling down my list on. So when somebody explained, oh, you like name the companies you want to go after, and then you build a program to go get those people. I was like, duh, like that makes so much sense. I started to build it, realized I didn't know anything. So then I ended up landing at an ABM agency, where I built the marketing program for the agency from a W-2 perspective. Still the most fun job I've ever had because I marketed marketing to marketers. So my entire job was like learn. The next month I'd teach it on. And I did that for like 2 years and then ended up getting acquired by a global agency to which I then sold $9 million in 6 months selling ABM programs and then realized I really don't enjoy working at a global agency because just lots of time zones to coordinate and we are expecting baby number 1. And it was just tough working 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. because of all the time zones. I'm working in sales. So I ended up transitioning into a sales education company. And I really loved that job. But I launched a side hustle that I lovingly refer to as Scrappy ABM shortly after joining that organization with the intent being that I might get a couple clients that could help replace my wife's income so she could become a stay-at-home. And, you know, 3 weeks after launch, we had done about $300,000 in sales. And I was like, got it. I think we're going to go do this. And that was now 2 years and a month ago. And it's now we're at about $200,000 a month. We've got a team about 14. So it has done okay as a side hustle.
Talk about explosive growth out the jump. So take us back to those early days. What was your unique positioning or perhaps the unique mechanism that people saw that gap in the market that you identified that people wanted to be a part of?
Yeah. So I joined kind of in the ABM craze that happened in 2020. And if you look at the data that has come out since 2020, roughly 80% of marketing programs that were started in 2020 failed by 2023. Like really tough that like 80% failed. The exact statistic is 79%, but I ran up to 80 because I'm a marketer.
Yeah.
So when I look at it through that lens, I was like, that's really bad. And I was fortunate enough that I launched my first ABM program, and my first ABM program totally bombed. We can talk about that if you want, but the second ABM program I ended up creating did work, and it wasn't fancy. It was a really good list of people with a really good value proposition and offer, and then a basic CRM and a marketing automation platform. So I was like, cool. Like, I just need the ability to segment an audience. I need the ability to send stuff. I need a good piece of content that goes with it. And I needed to know how I can measure success. And an ideal situation is I can do that repeatedly. So yep. I built ABM programs just using CRM and marketing automation. From there, I did that for like 3 or 4 years. So when I went to go launch a business, I was like, well, I've done ABM and I've done it in a way that is scrappy, because I was also a solo marketer. And then my salesperson quit. So I was running ABM programs as a solo marketer and seller. So like I had no advantages and it still worked. So I was like, well, I know how to do that. Do that. So the whole value proposition was build ABM with what you've got today. And that was a very unique position, because most other people that are in this space are saying, we'll go buy about $200,000 to $400,000 in new technology and then hire us.
Yeah.
And like, or crazy.
Yeah.
Don't buy the technology and then just hire us, and we'll validate that ABM works for your business, and then you can scale it through the technology implementation.
Okay. Well, you know, many of our listeners are in that, you know, 1 million to 20 million ARR. So I think this is going to be very relevant. If you could, you know, kind of share the sauce a little bit around how should someone think about getting started in a scrappy way, and what are some of the proven methods you've seen someone start to see those wins pretty early on?
Yeah. So the first thing that I would outline is, if you don't have established product market fit, don't run an ABM program. The goal of ABM, from my perspective, is to go identify our absolute best fit customers and build a program that is designed to go get more of those people. So if you don't have product market fit, I say this with love, you don't know who your best customer is. I didn't formalize an ICP until February. So I had done business for 18 months and I just needed more data. So I sold people and very readily gave refunds when it didn't work and said, I'm so sorry. And then after doing it for a year and a half, it's like, oh, well, these are the customers that got like pretty massive wins with us. Those are what they looked like. There are some consistencies. Great. Like, that's going to be our ICP. So if you don't know who you work with, or you're still at kind of a stage, cause especially in that 1 million to 3 million range, which I'm right there. We're about to scale up to 3 million by the end of the year. It's tough to know who your ICP is. So again, first and foremost, know that, and don't just say, well, we really like working with these kinds of customers. Look at the data and say, not just they were profitable for us, but like they got value and they sent friends. And if we asked if you'd be a testimony in a case study, they would like excitedly do it.
Yeah.
If you've got that, you've got product market fit. Now go get more of those people. So that's the first thing.
Okay. Before we move on, actually, like what did you identify? Maybe talk in detail about those customers that you're like, okay, they clearly saw some value. They're referring, they paid in full, they got the value. What do they look like in terms of their stage, their industry, maybe company size, value prop? Yep.
So we've got two different service offerings. So we have two very different ICPs. The main ICP that we talk to, I would say truly like 90% of the time, is going to be the typically like $20 to $100 million SaaS company or vertical specific company. I'm intentional with that language of vertical specific, because we have got some service companies that they're not SaaS. They just like serve one very specific niche, which is great. They've got typically a dedicated sales team that's already doing some form of outbound. They've got a marketing team of somewhere between like 3 to 8 marketers. They're using HubSpot or Salesforce as their CRM, or they've got HubSpot, Pardot, or Marketo for their marketing automation platform. Okay. And then the other component is that their average contract value is truly at minimum $30,000 a year. And if it's at $30,000, they've got customers that stay for 2 to 3 years, so that the lifetime value on that could be $60,000 to $90,000.
Yep.
Where I'm really comfortable is at least a $50,000 average contract value, because at that point, you're going to typically get a program within year one. So that's how I think through a lot of our criteria. There are some negative attributes. So for example, we don't work with marketing agencies on our ABM programs anymore, which actually is really sad to me, because like, I know this works super well for marketing agencies.
Yeah.
But out of protection for our business, we worked with four agencies. All four stole our IP and passed it off as their own. It's like, yep. Don't do that anymore. Because I was like, cool. Like, that sucks.
Yeah, lesson learned.
So instead, we have our podcast offering, which takes account-based marketing principles, but puts it into a podcast format. What I have found is that actually works extraordinarily well for agencies. It's how we've scaled our business. Mm-hmm. It's relationship play. So again, if you're in that $1 to $6 million range and typically more founder-led in a services business, and you look at it and you're like, I need like 20 to 30 customers to be a highly scaled, profitable business. A podcast is a great program for you to run because it checks so many boxes. So again, that's typically founder-led, maybe one person helping you with marketing, but they're not like a CMO. They're like a marketing assistant. And then typically it's still a founder-led sale at that stage.
Okay. So let's transition into like, what does your content-driven approach look like right now with that customer journey, right? So how are people discovering you? Is it on LinkedIn? Is it on the podcast first? How are they binging you and building that relationship with you before they reach out? What does that look like?
Great question. So the primary discovery mechanism is LinkedIn for us. I don't say this with pride. I used to, but like, it's actually, we need to fix that. If you Google ABM agency, we're not on the first 10 pages of Google. We're not optimized for search because we have next to no blog content. Mm-hmm. Just have homepage and services pages on our website. So for us, it's not a discovery engine at all. It's all LinkedIn. And then I did a lot of podcast interviews over the past 2 years. So I think I've done over 75 podcast interviews on different shows in the past 2 years. So we get discovered on other people's podcasts. And then I've also done quite a few webinars. So in the past just 2 months, we've done 16 different webinars, most of which were hosted by other people. So I do a lot of earned content through podcasting webinars as discovery mechanisms. And then through that, they typically find our show. And then we have a fairly aggressive release schedule. So we've released 2 episodes a week for 2 years. So in less than 2 years, we already have over 200 episodes live.
Yep.
When we look at it through those lenses, those are the main ways that people want to discover us. And then I have a lot of people that get hooked on the podcast and they just go binge 50 episodes that are all very practical playbooks on how to do ABM. And then the other thing that we do is just reference lots of webinars. So we host a webinar at least once a month. And then the thing that we just did, which has been such a high value for us and for the people that attended, is we did a day-long virtual workshop for 6 hours where I just gave away exactly how we build ABM programs for our clients. We didn't promote it because I didn't.
Yeah.
I actually want people to show up for the first one because I was like, this may not go well. So like before we like blow it in podcasts of like, oh, we're doing this thing. Just go to scrappyabm.com/workshop, which side note, if you'd like to go check it out, still live. So go there. We had 200 people register and we had 75 people show up live for a 6 hour workshop.
Wow.
And then out of that, we booked 40 meetings to like help people build out their programs. So that was really helpful. I know you're super clear. Not 40 sales calls, but like 40 meetings. We gave away all the templates and then we're doing a check-in with everybody more to get context on like, was this workshop helpful? The current rating was a 9.4 out of 10. So I think it was helpful, but we want to see not just immediate value, but like, did it work 45 days later? And if there's a gap, we can help you fill that gap. If not, I'm really glad you got a lot of value from it. So that's how people go from, they don't know we exist, typically to actually becoming a customer is through all that content and webinars, and then they come inbound, or it's actually we've scaled entirely through inbound, so they come and book a meeting with us.
Okay, that just reminds me of Hormozy just had his book launch, Money Models, and he hit a world record, right? Doubled the previous record of number of books sold, and it was like a full day launch on Saturday. So
I was in the Zoom background as one of the 150 people that was right behind Hormozy.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was there.
How'd you get featured?
I've been to some of their workshops. So they said, hey, as a thank you for being in some of our workshops, do you want to be in the background? I said, sure. So I was live on the workshop for 6 hours.
Would you do another 6 hour workshop? Do you think it's something in between the 1 to 6 hours? What is it about the 6 hours that, or that period of time that was helpful to you, or maybe was a lesson learned to scale it back? What were some of the learnings there?
I'm actually not scaling it back. We may actually do longer. And as a side note, we already went ahead and scheduled the next one. People are already registering for our November 13th workshop. So like if you go to scrappyabm.com/workshop, it's right there. And I guess I'll just put it this way. Here's the thing that for us, I think is the reason it worked is there's a lot of people that will do like a 1 hour webinar, like a sales pitch. We don't pitch as like our content. Now I'll be very transparent. There was an offer at the end. So like I did pitch like the last 10 minutes, but I felt very fine to pitch for 10 minutes after five hours and 55 minutes of free content. That's like our exact process. So I didn't feel bad about that. But when it's that long and like the content is actually that well, I mean, it's 300 slides of content with eight different templates on how to use all the templates to build an ABM program on your own. When it's that in depth and that detailed, I think the reason it worked is nobody else is doing that. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people say like, oh, give your stuff away. But like nobody books a full day, like as a founder, to just give away the information. So the offer just very easily stood out because it's like 6 hours. People are just like, what is it going to do for 6 hours? And it's free. So like, again, there's lots of 1 hour webinars that are like 20 minutes of content that are pretty fluffy pieces of content and then like a 30 minute sales pitch.
Yeah.
So I just think the offer in and of itself being the length of time, what made it stood out and why it was valuable and why I think people showed up.
Okay. If someone's getting started, right, they might feel a bit intimidated to do a 6 hour webinar.
Oh, yeah.
But they are bought into the idea of a, you know, a content driven approach, even a webinar. It sounds like you've done, you just got a lot of reps in with the podcast, the webinars, to now have the proven material for the 6 hour thing. What is like the crawl, walk, run approach for someone who's looking to get started here?
So to just give everybody a quick reminder, we did our first 6 hour workshop 2 weeks ago, and I've been in business for 2 years doing a very content led approach for 2 years. So like I didn't like do that day one. So you're right. Actually, all of the content that we shared had been previously shared content that was stitched together with a new thread all the way through or was expanded on from other places. So none of the material was like untested material. Like I knew it was going to hit. So I'm going to give that context. And like the crawl stage from my perspective is doing a podcast first, because with a podcast, as you talk through it with somebody, then you get the validation based on like the questions you ask. If you ask a question and then you think, how would I answer that question? And then you ask another expert and they answer it the same way that you thought through it. You're like, cool. Like that's one data point. That's like, I have the right way of thinking. And then if you do that over 40, 50, 100 episodes, and then you've asked multiple experts and you get very similar answers as to the ways that you would answer those questions, you're like, got it. It's like, I asked 100 experts. And like, even that, like, I asked 100 experts the same question, and here are the answers. Like, that's a marketing point. Like, that's a good, sorry, I got to go write that down for our podcast. I've never done that. But like, that's a very helpful validating point. So from there, you can then say, okay, well, these are my thoughts. I got validated by 100 experts or 50 or 30 or whatever your number is. Let me host a webinar on that topic. And you host a webinar on the topic. And then again, survey people. So like that was the best thing that we did, is we actually surveyed people on each individual section of the 6 hours and then on the thing as a whole. And I see it, we had some areas that like people, I had a couple who would give like a 2 for like one section. I was like, good. Like a lot of them were 4s out of 4, but like I had a couple of 2s and I was like, got it. And then I read the feedback. I was like, oh, that's really good. So if you do incremental things after you've done, because again, for context, before you hosted a 6 hour workshop, I had delivered this same material in different sizes and snippets, each section at least 5 times to 5 different audiences. And then I stitched all of it together for a full 6 hour workshop. So like it had been validated a lot.
It's almost like this was your Netflix special, right? The 6 hour workshop was your Netflix special. Everything else was like a comedian. They're just testing material for the year leading up to it. They're like, oh, this joke bombed or whatever it was, or this one really hit, and you take the hits to your 6 hour workshop. That makes a lot of sense. When you said experts, are you talking about your ICP or other ABM marketers that you're trying to like identify pattern recognition?
Great question. So when I think about it, I invite my ICP onto the show. And many of the people that are in my ICP are also experts, but they don't hire us. I need to figure out how to say this appropriately, because they hire us because we are experts. But many of the people that hire us know how to do ABM extraordinarily well, which is why they value our strategic expertise.
Yeah.
Because we bring a strategic kind of sparring partner. They also hire a dedicated team of four that is RevOps, content, account management, and strategy. So mm-hmm. we become their fractional EBM team.
Yeah.
And they value not just the strategic sparring partner, but like
yep.
there's a pretty significant gap between strategic thinkers and then like execution people in the EBM doers. Space. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like our whole business is to bridge that gap. That's why I think a lot of people hire us. So I actually can get away with hiring ABM experts that are our ICP because many of them are strapped for bandwidth and they just need support to actually execute their programs.
That makes sense. You know, one of our clients is a RevOps consulting firm. So they work with Series A to D SaaS businesses, helping them drive operational excellence, either with CRM migrations or just like go-to-market functions, these sort of things. And it's, yeah, one of the benefits that they keep talking about in their content is they're brought in as a strategic thought partner, but they're also, you know, they can roll up their sleeves and help with the implementation. So it's the strategy and it's also like augmenting a team and knowing, okay, you know, like we don't have this particular resource that's helpful. And it sounds like we might need to hire someone like this full time to, if we want to maintain this. Another thing is it actually helps quite a bit with internal team burnout. If there's a lot of repetitive work, it's helpful to have a thought partner to be like, is there a smarter way to do this? And it's also division of labor and like bouncing ideas off of and having this tight feedback loop so people don't feel like they're spinning their wheels. So it's great for employee and team morale too, is what they said.
Couldn't agree more.
So let's talk a bit about LinkedIn because that's also the entry point for a lot of people before they even think of a webinar. So talk a bit about your LinkedIn content strategy and also what have you found to be pieces of content that might even be brought up when someone gets on a sales call? It's like, hey, I saw you talked about this thing. And you're like I felt like you're in my head. What are some of those topics?
Yeah. So the overall approach that I don't think is talked about enough necessarily with LinkedIn is just like the network that you have. Before I think through content, I actually just think of like who I'm connected with, because who I'm connected with are typically people that are going to see the content. For most people that I talk to and they're like trying to get started on LinkedIn, it's a bunch of old coworkers or like family and friends and people from college. Like actually the step one that we actually take is build your target account list and then go strategically connect with all of your target accounts so that when you then create and post content, it actually shows up for your target accounts. Yep. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we think through content. Again, I've tried to create a relatively closed loop system. So actually most of our content that I post publicly comes from podcasts and webinars and things along those lines. So for me, I think of things through the lens of problem or product content. So I spend probably almost all of my time on LinkedIn talking about problems and then ways that people could viably solve them. So, and again, none of that's like hire us. It's like, there's six very well documented reasons why EBM programs fail. So it's like execution, leadership buy-in, sales and marketing alignment, measurement, limited internal resourcing, and targeting. So I talk about those six things all the time. And then I work through how to help people actually solve those six areas specifically through the content that we create. So I give away scripts. I give away tactical playbooks. I give away a lot of stuff. I went really heavy on video. So I'm going to give this as a heads up for everybody. LinkedIn algorithm changes on a pseudo frequent basis. So the one thing that I wish I had done differently is I went from all written content, which performed fairly well for me, to all video content, which tanked. So my reach was cut by 75%, which is pretty significant. So
yeah,
I would also cycle in different formats. And then again, I don't know everyone's business model. What I would just say is, you talk about the main problems that your customers experience and then tell them exactly how to solve those problems, and you do that a lot, that's helpful. And there will be certain posts that for whatever reason just are what I refer to as bangers. Like they just really go to the moon. And the piece of advice that I wish I had taken earlier, because I've been on LinkedIn for 5 years now, is just when those things take off, copy and paste them into a Google Doc that you then recycle every like 2 to 3 months. Because people's memories are very poor. Or the other thing is, if you consistently grow your network and your audience, like I think I've gained 10,000-ish followers in the past year. Like I may have had content 18 months ago that is still relevant today that those 10,000 followers have never seen because they weren't following me at that time.
Right.
So like I can just pull that back. I know it works. It's again, tested material and just post it and then do that again the next quarter. And like really all you need are 90 to 100 banger LinkedIn posts.
Yep.
And you're pretty much good forever.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Like one of the biggest challenges we hear from, you know, busy founders and CEOs who have 20 other things doing running their company is I don't know what to write about, or I'm content overwhelm, right? They're staring at a blank screen. They got 20 minutes to pump something out. And it is this idea of the first 100 days will probably be the hardest because we are building that bank or trying to identify the proven content. But once we have that, then it's almost just like taking a look at the data and seeing what makes sense to repurpose. What can we schedule out so they don't even think about it? It's already just running in the background. And then it's like, you're like, you're always adding new followers. So these are people that are seeing it for the first time. Your memory is a lot better of your content than everyone else's. So don't feel like you're being overly repetitive. And then you're probably going to find some unique angle or a hook or an additional point that you might want to weave into it. So that's also an opportunity to test, you know, additional material. Or also, yeah, we recommend always testing 10% or more of new content as well, while still keeping the bangers in rotation because you know they're going to perform. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Do you have a workflow right now? I know, you know, with a lot of these AI tools, you can scale a content operation for LinkedIn while still maintaining your tone of voice. So do you do things like a content interview with maybe someone on your team, or what does your workflow look like these days for LinkedIn content?
I mean, truly, because I did 60 podcast interviews and 16 webinars in 60 days.
So you just got a lot of raw material that you're ready to cut
out. Yeah, like our team has more content that they actually know what to do with.
Yeah.
Because again, for like, I'm taking time off to for kiddo number two to get here. So like, I just made sure we were really far ahead on content. So admittedly, our team has done a really great job of uploading lots and lots of content that I've personally written into GPTs to then nail the formatting and the tone and voice for how I would write something.
And
they only pull from transcripts. And as a result of pulling directly from transcripts, I know it's content that I would agree with because I said it.
Right.
So it ensures that really what they're doing with AI is not content creation, but it is content formatting for different platforms, and then they republish it from there.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense. And then what does that, once someone, whether it's on the post itself, whether you're driving to a specific action to then booking a call, how do you make the call to action as compelling and as relevant as possible? And what is that next step that you drive people to take?
It's a great question. I think I do a really bad job of it. I don't know that I have a great answer for that
other
than I've just mainly posted a lot. And for me personally, when I post a lot of content over a long enough period of time, people have been smart enough to like go listen to the podcast. On my LinkedIn profile, there's a button that links out to our newsletter. So we lead them towards not like a book a call, but more of top of funnel type assets.
And
from there, my general perspective is if somebody spends 50 hours with me by listening to a podcast over like 60 episodes, when they need help with ABM, they're probably going to call me. And that's good enough for me.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Would you be comfortable talking a bit about, you know, what does your like pricing model look like? And generally, how long do folks work with you before maybe feel like they've been doing internally? Or what does that look like?
Yeah. So our pricing models are very different depending on which side of the house. Our podcast has a price point of like sub $3,000 a month, sub $5,000. And then it's a pretty big jump from five. We do like a $9,500 a month package, but that one is like insane. Our podcast strategist generates about 4 million views a year on YouTube. So that's actually more of a YouTube first approach to build you huge. We happen to run the third largest marketing podcast in the US. So that package was designed after we had helped that client do this, not that.
Okay.
So it's very,
it's not that on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. It's on Apple, Spotify, all that kind of stuff. So again, we learned a lot by helping him launch his show and scale it. So we turned that into a standardized package of things that people can expect. So that's one side of the house. And then an ABM side of the house, it's typically about roughly 11 and a half to 13 a month, depending on a couple of factors. But in short, the factors are typically levers for discounts. So I don't know if you don't know how to do negotiation through discounting, I highly recommend you go look up a guy named Todd Capone. He outlines the four levers of negotiation, which are length of commitment, time to cash, volume, and start date. So those are the four things. So we've built negotiation levers So we're very cards face up. We actually have a slide in every single one of our presentations called Want a Discount. We just tell people and actually give them a pricing calculator. It's kind of a name your price type tool. So I like that a lot. Makes negotiations far more collaborative, and our goal is to be a collaborative partner. So I'm happy to meet you on price. Just here's how we get there. And there is a way. I'll leave you this with a teaser. There is a way that I would do a program for free. I would absolutely do a program for free if you meet some specific criteria.
Okay. But I think we've already got like our content for part two of our podcast, where I think I'd love to dive into the pricing side of things and negotiation tactics and really being that collaborative, like both sides of the table kind of deal, and like how you approach that. So I've just made a note of that for our next topic. Maybe just like to double click on the ABM side of things. What are the maybe like quick golden nuggets that you might recommend someone, you know, before they go and watch one of your webinars or podcasts? Is there like a tech stack, or you said like there are 5 points in your framework? Like, what are those? And maybe what are a couple of tools that someone can get?
So we've got two core frameworks. So framework one is the account progression model. And essentially it's just awareness, initial engagement, meaningful engagement, MQA, SQA, opportunity, and re-engagement. So those are the core stages. And the reason we outline that is there are different goals and measurement for success at each stage of the account progression model. And one of the greatest things that we see people do a lot is they measure awareness programs on like booked meetings. And it's like, well, that's not right. So we make sure that we align the kind of program with where it is in the account progression model or the buyer's journey. So that's the first thing. Second thing is then our 4D framework, which is data, distribution, destination, and direction. So if you're trying to build out any program, playbook, campaign, whatever your language is on how we actually go to market, you've got to have a good data source that outlines targets with viable reasons to reach out. If you've got good targets and good triggers, you have personalized, nuanced messaging. The example I always like to give is if you look at your inbox, many of you have been targeted today with cold outbound, but they had no good reason to reach out. And as a result, you ignore it. But if you have good targets with good triggers, you're going to pay attention. So that's the first thing. Second thing is then distribution, which is just like, how do we get in front of people? Could be email, could be social, could be any number of things. But like at the end of the day, all programs are only successful because we actually got in front of the right people. And then the next component is destination, which is just, where are we sending them to? So again, we want to make sure that we align the content destination with where the buyer is in their journey. So they actually like want to take that next step. And then lastly is direction, which is just, how do you plan to track it? Is you outline those things of who we're going after, why we're reaching out, what we're saying to them, how we're getting in front of them, where we're sending them, and how we track it. If you know all of those things, you've got a playbook that you can run over and over and over again.
Yeah. Wow. I love it. I love just the structured approach there. It sounds like there's still a lot to like to double click on as people, if people are more interested. So Mason, this has been a masterclass, like a wealth of information that you dropped, both on the content-driven approach to drive demand and build trust and visibility, and then also the frameworks around account-based marketing. So yeah, as we wrap it up, where can people go to learn more about you, the business, and yeah, really learn more about what you're building?
Yeah, I mean, scrappyabm.com. There's a newsletter. If you would like to come to that 6-hour workshop, as reference, we're doing it on November 13th, so you can see for yourself. And then again, Scrappy ABM, the podcast. And then if for some reason you would like more social content from me, just go to LinkedIn, type in Mason Cosby, and you can find us there.
Awesome. And we'll include all those links in the show notes. Mason, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, and look forward to having you on for part two. And in the meantime, I encourage folks to check out the 6-hour workshop in the coming weeks. All right. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Mason.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you want to do an even deeper dive on building out your ABM program, we're actually hosting our next ABM in a Day workshop on November 13th. It is a full 6 hours digging into all of the reasons ABM programs fail and exactly how to fix them. And I know what you're thinking, 6 hours is a huge time investment. Admittedly, it is, but it's taking 6 hours to ensure you nail the next 6 months of your ABM program. In case you're wondering, is it worth it? The last time we hosted it, we got a 9.3 out of 10 on our content. So I can guarantee this is a worthwhile time investment to ensure you nail your ABM program. So if that sounds like something you'd like to do, go to scrappyabm.com/workshop to register today, and we'll see you on November 13th.